So greetings, 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 everyone. Greetings of peace, Hotep, salam aleikum, peace be unto you, world of peaceful believers who are striving to transform their lives. This is Niamo, Nancy Mui Davis speaking, and I'm here today to talk to you about another mover, shaker, light worker in our existence and on the human plane that we want to know about, and that's Mr. Onaje Muid, a dear, dear friend who's a father of my children. And I told him I wouldn't go deeper than that. And that's really the sum of what you need to know, right? And we have been traveling a similar path for a long time. And we've been blessed to be friends for a very long time. And Onaje has recently got a new accolade that kind of bespeaks how he just loves living and how he has had an impact on other lives. And I'm going to let him tell you about that. Just to say briefly, Onaje is a social worker activist par excellence and has done a lot of work in the African American, Native American communities. And he is exemplary as an individual who not only talks the talk, but certainly walks the walk. So Onaje, will you share with us your latest accolade and then lead us into what you're doing now and how we might align some of what you're doing with the 9 principles for loving living, which we extract from the Quran. Introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers. Did you hear me? Hello? Hello? I don't hear him at all. Goodness. Okay. So.
Okay, I might have hit the button by accident. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, very good. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Hotep, thank you for the invitation. Today I received a notification from the New York Academy of Medicine, which is basically a professional society that has as its mission the well-being and the health of cities, of people living in cities. So even though it's in New York, it's really a global mission of helping people to live healthy in urban environments and to be accepted into their fellowship is the height of my professional career. So you're actually speaking to me on a day that I'll never, ever forget. And the day is this acceptance. And it's done through 3 methods. One is that you would have to have an endorser. He's already in, is a fellow, and then you have to have 2 supporters. So the dean of Columbia University, where I work as an advisor, was my endorser, and then I had 2 other colleagues that provided support letters. And, of course, even though you submit something doesn't necessarily be accepted, it was accepted by the committee, and now the final step is for the trustees of the Academy to accept it on October the 11th. So thank you for asking me about it and bringing it up to fore. So this is the first public, you know, announcement of that achievement.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So your name preceded you.
How so?
Your name and your works. Tell us about the name Onaje Eagleheart.
Well, Onaje was given to me, oh man, I don't know, maybe 1974, 75, something like that, when I was at the West Indian Day Parade, early in the morning, the same parade, same place that I re-met you after. We had both gone in separate directions, and you had went to school in California and came back. And you mistaken me to to be your cousin and gave me a big hug, which was a wonderful thing. It was at that same place that revelation came that that was the vibration of the name that I needed to assume. So Onaji is Swahili for sensitive one. In Yoruba, it's the owner of the feeling. And Eagle Heart is an attribute, a name that came as a result, really, of a joining. I was walking through the forest one day and looked down and saw something that I thought to be a white rock, a little white rock. But when I picked it up out of the leaves and out of the dirt, actually, it was a problem.
I'm sorry.
Not a problem. It's right on time. Play the drums. Play the drums. So it was a, it actually was a carving of an eagle. Now, it's been said that some indigenous people had the art of making stone sculptures, you know. So there is a question, was this handcrafted by humans or was it done by the creator that carves rocks and things in different shapes? So that we won't know. What I do know is that this is a beautiful piece of artwork that resembles an eagle. And since that time, I've assumed the name Eagle Heart. So that's two of the names, you know, of my name. Speaking of name, it's Onaje Jua Osunu. Jua is the son. Osunu is one who hesitates not to enhance or improve life. And then Abdul Muin is servant of God, the restorer. So the name has been unfolding over my lifetime, and the things that I've done and currently am doing, in fact, very much are aligned with the name that has proven itself to be a path, a destiny, and also a legacy.
Absolutely. What I hear in what you described as the unfolding of different phases of your life are, they were like praise names at different parts of your life. Different times of your life, you earned or you sought or you were given different praise names, and they reflect where you were and your growth. And it's the way that I'm glad you went there and fully gave the full name, because I shortened a bunch of stuff. Muid is Abdul Muid. That's quite true. And I'm so appreciative that you did that way. So you've done a lot in your life. And you recently just left a position that you had been at. I don't know. Was it 10 years or was it 5 years you were at that position?
Well, interesting. It was 11. 11 is usually a number of mastery. 11 and 22. So I was there 11 years.
Okay.
And that happened through an invitation that the executive director thought that he was creating or manufacturing, but I see it as being an invitation from the creator. When I got a call upon my graduation from Stony Brook University with a master's degree in social work, I got a call just before I walked out the door inviting me to the interview, asking me if I wanted to interview. So I saw it as being a spiritual assignment. And a number of times I've tried to leave, but it didn't appear as if it was the time or the way to leave. And I'm convinced that I fulfilled that assignment. And since that time, I've had the summer to myself. So I was a clinical social director, which was basically the second person in charge of a behavior health organization. And I had the freedom to design it as best as I could, given my education, given my research, and given my own theoretical developments. I have to say, I'll precede that by saying that working for two behavior health organizations in New York City for a combination of 25 years. I worked with Piggyback from 1986 to 2000, and then I worked from Reality House 2004 to 2015. and, you know, some other things along the way, part-time. But it's quite unusual for someone to be, to work at two organizations for 25 years. That's a quarter of a century.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you really put it in.
I was on the line. On the
front line. Stripes. You burned, you know, recognition from that academy. And what was the name of the academy again?
Yes, the New York Academy of Medicine.
The New York Academy of Medicine. Okay, excellent. And I think their location is like 57th Street or?
Well, actually, it's like 109th Street in right, I guess you can say that it's in El Barrio, really. It's definitely in El Barrio.
Right? Oh, okay. It's in El Barrio. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. And then you said a word there that I wanted to get again. When you picked up what you thought was a rock, it was really, you used a word that you called it a cauldron, you said?
No, not a cauldron. No, I was saying a carving. It's a stone. It's a stone.
Oh, it looked stone carving. Okay, yeah. Got it.
So if you look at it, you would say, wow, this is an eagle. It represents an eagle. And it's like a bald eagle because it's white. The head is like white, and then you have like the gray body. And then
you shared that with other folks, and they said that's a sign?
No. I just kind of kept it, and I did share it with the person who's become my medicine man. His name is Reed Brown. He's a Lakota in South Dakota.
Okay.
On the Wambly Reservation. And he invited me to come to his Sundance, which I finally did after about 2 years. And I shared that rock with him, and he was quite impressed with it. So there is a certain kind of meaning for me.
Excellent. So that's a nice segue into the Sundancer goal and vision quest that you're a part of right now. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
The Lakota Nation has seven sacred rites, and one of them happens to be the Sundance. And in the Sundance, it's all about purification and about praise to the Creator so that the people won't suffer. And it's a 9-day ritual, 4 days of preparation. The fifth day is called the Tree Day, which is at the center of the arbor. And then 4 days that you're actually doing the sun dance, which is in the morning, throughout the day, in the sun, and then sometimes you even dance at night. If the eagle dancers are asking you to come out and dance, then you have to put in your regalia and come out and dance at night. But it's a spiritual, one of the high spiritual rituals that has to do with connecting to Mother Earth, connecting to the four directions, connecting to the Milky Way, and being in a transformed state for those 4 days.
So does anyone undergo the praise of the Sundancer ritual, or are you chosen? Are you selected?
It's only by request. By invitation. Someone has to invite you. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to go to a Sundance tomorrow. You get there only through invitation. And for me, that invitation seemed to have been in the works for some time, because it was 7 years from the point that this Lakota woman gave me her Sundance items. You have a crown that's made of sage, you have bracelets that's made of sage, you have anklets that's made of sage. So this is part of the ritual that in terms of how you prepare yourself. And she chose to give me those implements and there was 7 years from the time she gave them to me to the time I became a Sundancer. And seven is a very, you know, important number. Four is very important with indigenous people, and seven is very important. So for me to have been given it, and then 7 years hence become a Sundancer, because at the time it was like I was, you know, mortified that she would even give it to me, because this is a stranger. You know, we didn't really know each other. We was in a workshop together on talking about cultural competency. But for her to give me something so precious to her and her family was quite an honor. So one gets to Sundance through invitation. So it seemed to have been from the spirit world, you know, through her. And then again, in terms of Reed Brown being the person who invited me to Sundance.
So speak the sister's name.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, her name. Now I'm embarrassed because it's been some time now. It's been over 10 years.
When it comes up, when it'll come up. But I love the way what you've experienced has been a trajectory from through the name, through the praise. I'm talking about the principles of loving living, how what you described to me mm-hmm. is very much in keeping with these first four principles: name, praise, master, and then unify. And I'm hearing how, you know, that special ritual one had to be invited to, and how it's the mastery that was acknowledged, but that you experienced, that was experienced by your group, your tribe, your people. And then you were invited to be part of something that would help you to unify, not only more solidly with the group, the Lakota, but also with the universe, with also the heavens, the directions that you mentioned. Mm. In the book, I actually touch on the seven characters that, you know, everyone has a personality. And we have gone through the training, you and I, the special communication training that identifies seven specific characters, and they're all over the world in various forms and shapes, including seven dwarfs and the seven prophets, seven major prophets. And so it's like this, these are elements of the Fatiha, opening prayer of the Quran, that it begins in the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. All praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, most gracious, most merciful. Master of the day of judgment. You alone we worship / serve. You alone we ask for help. And so for me, what I've done is I got that unify signifies you alone. This is how the prayer actually links us with the heavens and the earth, links us with what we came from, you see, because we must unify. All the other principles, as I've listed, as I've heard them in my spirit and written them down and expounded on them and used them to explore different truths and guidance from the Quran, are nouns and verbs at the same time. Unify is the only one that is only a verb because the unity is there. It's ever present. And what we as humans have to choose to do to be successful is to recognize the genesis of everything we say that we desire. Everything we say that we desire. So what I hear is that your life has been one of service, and that's like the next principle for me. So I'm listening to service.
Before you go to service, I'd like to, something resonated with me.
Okay.
When I was in school for industrial engineering, mm-hmm. one of the placements through the cooperative education program was in a place called Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Make sure that your voice is close enough to the computer because you're getting softer.
The place I was working at as an intern was called General Electric in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And when I used to go back and forth from Englewood from New York to Massachusetts, you know, doing breaks or whatever, I came through the Berkshire Mountains. And in my travels, I used to say, wow, you know, it would be beautiful to hug the mountains. That was the concept that I had. And when I became Muslim, Then thereafter, I felt that I was able to hug the mountains. When you talk about this unity and this spiritual connection, that was very much in my life. Particularly after I, you know, made the declaration. So when you talked about the unity, it just reminded me of that, of like I used, how I used to yearn to, like, oh, I wish I could hug the mountains. What would that feel like? What would that be like? And after I became Muslim, I was able to do that.
That's wonderful. I must tell you, we're not going in any order. It's just, it's fine. I hear what you're saying, because you did. It's interesting how when we took our Shahada, when we declared that there's no God but one God, one Creator, so many things opened up to us. And I appreciate what you just said. You know, hugging the mountains became real for you. And that may have been when I may have started hugging trees after that myself. Because I certainly got that energy. It's like an energy. When you submit totally to the Creator of heavens and earth and are listening in every moment for your next step, that's a level of surrender that nature exemplifies. And I talk about this a lot in the book. Nature is always willing to do its service. It's willing to shed the trees. Now it's fall, it's autumn, or it's going to be soon. And the trees and plant life, it's willing to shed. It's willing to lay itself down and rest, become nothing, go back into the earth so that it could incubate and rest and hibernate and then possibly come out again to be something, to grow taller, to blossom more fully. And so that is the paradigm for our growth. And maybe that's the reason why after taking Shahada, or in whatever form, whatever religious path a person goes through, it might be being saved, being baptized, that some people would go through. Maybe something else in different Native American traditions, that they let themselves down, they let themselves be washed, they let themselves be totally, you know, at sajda with the head on the ground, totally vulnerable, so that the highest and best good can eventually emerge. And that's what we have access to. And that's the relationship between the words serve and worship, is that we may outwardly serve people, the hungry, the sick, the people who are needing. We may give things away to help folks. And in so doing, we're with the consciousness of spirit, with the consciousness of the Creator, with the consciousness of our own abundance, we are worshiping the Creator as we serve people. So they really are the same. And in, as we know in Arabic, the ABD, they are similar words, right? So I'm so happy to hear about how you're serving and how it's being recognized and how you submitted over time. And is there a goal or something that you have yet to accomplish, or a vision of yourself you've yet to attain? Because you've done so much.
It's only one goal, and that goal is to submit to the Creator. That's the goal, is to be so submission. Constantly striving to do, and by way of deeds, it's my hope to lay out the standards and the guidelines for what is called rehabilitation. When a people are wrong, particularly grossly wrong, that's called the human rights violation. And with that, in the United Nations, they look at war crimes, they look at genocide, and they look at crimes against humanity as being the gross human right violations, egregious human rights violations. And when anyone suffers from those violations, there must be a remedy, and the remedy is called reparations. Reparations has three aspects: compensation, restitution, and then also rehabilitation. So my life is dedicated to the rehabilitation of our people and all peoples who have been wronged in such matters. And certainly here on the American continent, which indigenous people call Turtle Island, my work primarily is with African people of African descent and people, indigenous peoples. And the rehabilitation aspect is so, it's the essence of what we're living to do. And so therefore my name, Abdul Muweed, is connected to that mission of the restoration, connected to rehabilitation. But you have to know what the harm is. So you have, so to understand the harm, you need a way, a grand concept to lay it out for you. And that's called historical trauma. Trauma that's passed down from one generation to the next. And just recently it's been found through scientific study, through the new science of epigenetics, that is the connection between the environment and gene pool, that trauma is now, has been proven to be passed down in the gene structure. So this is not a theory anymore. It's proven scientifically that people will pass down trauma. So my work is to lay the foundation of the point of view, the standards, that would finally comprise our demand for reparations as it relates to the rehabilitation aspect. And then that gets translated into what is called social health. That gets translated into what is called public health. So it's in sociology, they say that they ask the question, is this a social problem or is this an individual issue? So what America has tried to do is make all of our problems seeming to be personal, like some kind of way it's inherent deficiency defect in us. But in fact, it comes from the original assault, whereby disabilities, defects, and things of that sort were made apparent. And the policies that came after that never addressed the original assault, therefore never really attended to the deep healing that has to be done. So my work is to further that discussion and lay out some of the thinking that has to be done in terms of understanding that. So whatever that reservoir is something that I'm still working with. So that's what's left for me to do, is to make whatever contribution I'm supposed to make toward that treaties, then that's what I'm intending to do.
It's so profound and wonderful. Of course, the reparations initiative is an ask. And that is what one does when one has done their work in submission to the creator of heavens and earth. Then it becomes apparent, how can I do it even better? Where am I really needed? What is the cry that I'm hearing that I uniquely can respond to in such a way that my world is uplifted? And you put it in the one word, and that was reparations. Now, name the three aspects of reparations once again, please.
Yeah, compensation that most people think about, you know, yes. The money aspect. Okay. Restitution, to return people back to the state that they were in prior to the harm. And then rehabilitation, that is the healing that has to take place in order to make a people whole.
So to make the people whole, that rehabilitation is what has what social services has been attempting to do to this point. Because I have a conversation that is basically an elaboration on the truth. It's what I've observed is that some of the things that African Americans, Africans in this society, were doing for themselves were taken by larger society and adopted, and now you have to get degrees in it, whereas we were doing it for ourselves here. And that's what the social service system and social welfare system seem to have taken from observing how liberated Africans whose parents or themselves had previously been enslaved, how they took care of one another. And then it became a profession, which someone like yourself, every year you have to get your stuff updated. Or maybe you don't anymore now that you've left that particular 25 years of being in the social work field per se. Now you're at a different kind of level of contribution to the field. And so I'm just hearing that the reparations request, you said it was a demand. And for me, I really get that it's a demand. And I think it's a demand more so of ourselves. I think it is a specific ask and a specific kind of conversation if we're talking about others, because people do not respond to demand. And so I'm very clear, especially inside of these principles, how we must go about naming exactly what it is that we're talking about when we seek reparations, how we must praise what has been done that is even a modicum of reparations that has already occurred, how we must, you know, master the technique of actually acknowledging and shaping how it is we envision our people becoming no more in need of reparations. That's where the mastery comes in. So the demand for me that I hear is that, and that's the next book, of course. This is the general first book, but the next inquiry will be, who are we demanding the reparations of? I think it's ourselves, and we're already doing the work of fulfilling the demand. And another level of that demand is asking people who have done the harm, or asking the systems that have done the harm, or asking the environment that has allowed the harm to adjust itself in response to how we have repaired ourselves. That's may or may not be what you mean, but I'm just sharing how I'm hearing where that's going for me. And I really appreciate your bringing it up, because the reparations issue, people go right to compensation, as you say. That's immediately what they're talking about. And that's like the receive principle. They immediately talk about, so what are you going to do? Buy a bunch of Cadillacs. Spend your money in a bunch of clothes the minute you get some money in reparations. Well, there are myriad programs and initiatives that are out here that we could be very proud of. There's the Fatherhood Initiative coming out of Chicago with black men and boys, and take your child to work, and in terms of fathers, in terms of men, and really focusing on what men and women do in our communities to improve self-development. And at the same time, we have to acknowledge modern day lynching and address it. And that has to be compensated for. And, you know, we must have restitution for that. And that's absolutely the case, because otherwise there is a push, and that's the struggle. It's push, pull, and struggle. And the reason I didn't call it struggle in the first place is because I don't want people to glorify the struggle. Struggle is really pushing. All we need to know is that we got to push. It's going to be constant tests. There's going to be constant examinations. We're going to be tested, because we have to prove that our initiative, our goal, is the most righteous one. We have to show that. We have to show why it's righteous, why it's worthy. And so it's a push, and the blade of grass comes through the concrete. So nothing is impossible. And that's what I get too from from what you shared. I'm inspired by it, so I really appreciate that. So you know, I'm going all the way. You know, it's like, this is what is expanding us. That's the last principle. You know, it's like ask, receive, push, and expand. Mm. And these principles are right out of the Fatiha. The last section says, "Guide us in the straight way, the way of those whom you bless, not those who run your wrath, nor the strayers." So it's like asking for guidance, receiving it as people who are blessed. The push is against being, you know, those who are, you know, earning wrath. You don't want to be in a struggle, and, you know, but some people are going to be tried by other people. And that's what the book says. You're going to be tried by other people just to see what you're made of. And there's nothing to fear about that, because that's a natural process. If we observe nature, this is part of why the STEM system, science, technology, engineering, and math, it's a travesty that it's not more inculcated in our young children. Because if we just look at nature, we'll see the answer to everything. You know, there's a cycle of life. There's a food chain. And so when we understand that, then we know that, of course, someone's going to push us, and of course, we're going to push back, and of course, what we do is going to push others. And that's just how it works. And we should arise from these interactions with other peoples better human beings. That's how we can use our mind to actually uplift ourselves. And that will expand who we are as humanity, as oneness. And so it's at that elevation, once we have that oneness, it's far off, it may be near, but that's what we're going for. Recognition and respect, you know, as people who are down on the bottom part of the totem pole, we're looking to become higher on the totem pole, or on the ladder, let's say, so that is who is low now will be high. But understanding all the time, all the while, that there is a cycle. Who is high now may drop down all the way down to the bottom. And it continues, and it shall continue. So I'm just really inspired by what you shared. I thank you for that. I thank you. So if you had a message for, you could choose anyone. What would be your message for either young people or politicians? There's some very, very important things happening internationally as it relates to Middle East, as it relates to African development. You have any final comments for us?
Well, I would say that with my indigenous brothers and sisters, we say Mite Kuye Oyase. All our relations, the two-leggeds, the four-leggeds, those that swim, those that fly, those that crawl, that we're all related. And once we see ourselves in the web of life, not apart from it, but not a part, like separate from it, but being part of it, then we can see that there is really enough for everything. And we're living out of fear, for the most part. We're living out of scarcity, but there's enough for everybody. So our work is really a work of transformation. How do we begin to, how do we continue to fall trapped to imprison to the dynamics of change, but in fact move with the elevation of transformation? And that can only be done by seeing, like you said, the unity of creation. You know, we say Tawheed, the oneness of Allah, the oneness of humanity. So there's no races. There's not a black race. There's not a white race. There's not a Chinese race. You know, it's one race, the human race. And it's those who are the kufars who try to cover that up, that have created the problems by saying that I'm better than you, saying that I'm made of smokeless fire. And I'm better than you. And because I'm better than you, you have to serve me. And that which is available, I should have, and you shouldn't have none of it. So all that is coming out of Quran in terms of this ego-centric state. So we have to see ourselves as being part of creation. Mita Koye Oyasin, all our relations. And that's what I say is the answer.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. I agree with you. It's the answer. And I'm glad to be corrected, because I had it that it's all my relatives. Is that also a way of saying that?
Yeah, you can say all my relations, all my relatives. It's the same idea that we are related, you know, but it's also to say that, everyone has his place, and indigenous people don't really think of hierarchy of saying that I'm better than. The role of Khalifa is thought of being a caretaker.
Yes.
Not so much like I'll rule over you, but I have the responsibility to be the caretaker.
Yes.
For Mother Earth, and for the other nations, you know, be it two-legged or four-legged nations. So we say, how do we mend the sacred hoop? How do we create healing circles? You know, how do we create, how do we mend the sacred hoop so that we can have good medicine for ourselves mentally, physically, and spiritually. How do we do it with our families? How do we do it with our communities? How do we do it with the world? So that's the work that those who of consciousness and of good intentions are about, mending the sacred hoop.
The sacred hoop.
The sacred hoop. And there's many hoops inside of hoops, inside of hoops.
So that's not the dream catcher hoop.
No. No, no. The dream catcher is just there to things that you don't want in your life. You catch them and kind of get rid of them. But the sacred hoop is the spirit of life. The spirit of life. And how do we continue to acknowledge, enhance, embrace the spirit of life? Which means things have to be in ma'at. Things have to be in order. Things have to be in balance. Things have to be in harmony. And with that, you have reciprocity and you have spiritual justice.
That's right. Beautiful. Thank you so much. The infinite blessings, may they descend on you and yours and your family. And I want to know, is there any final words that you might have? Can you give us a final blessing to just take us out? We have exactly a minute or two.
To the heavens, to the creator of heavens and earth, I pray that the words I've said are as close as I can say them for the messages to be heard that's needed, and that the work of my dear sister Niyamo gets expanded multiple times over, and that her purpose is met, and the work that she's to do gets completed. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much. Infinite blessings to you. This is the end of our sojourn for the moment, but we may meet again on a similar platform. So I thank you so very kindly for being with us today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Alhamdulillah. Praise be to God.